Hi,
Welcome to Shaken and
everyone.
Disturbed, everybody. I am Father God Darren Karp with my amazing, cute puppy overlord, Sith
Co-host
Lord,
John. Hi,
co-host
thank
Snoopy,
you. Yeah, co-host.
and then some commoner plebe pedestrian over
Bro.
there is John, Mother. I almost said Mother John.
Mother John, imagine. I was giggling because right before we hit record, you guys, Darren's like, okay, ready. Okay, ready when you, okay, go. I was like, kind of, I don't know, it was just funny because I was
He
like,
wasn't ready for anything, needless
I
to
wasn't
say.
ready. I kept telling you updates, and you're like, okay, yep, and okay, and hit record, and here
And
we
I was
go.
like, I really don't
You're
care.
like,
And
you really don't give a shit about what I'm saying.
I think you forgot that I end these main episodes.
I
Would
kind of
you?
did right there,
Yeah,
actually, right in the
you
beginning,
thought you might. I thought you
because
might.
we just recorded our NMR that you guys listened to last week, and I was just
And you
in.
intro that.
I intro that, and it was just I'm a little rusty. What can I say? How about our episode about the crash? I feel like a lot of people were like responding and like commented.
Well,
I
there's
don't
another one that I want to cover. I want to get into this week's case, but I'm going to watch
know.
it first and see if it's worth it. Everyone's talking about it, but I want to see if it's like worth covering in terms of us having like a different opinion when the doc says, but it's called Maternal Instinct.
I did see one listener in our Facebook group was asking if anyone was watching it. So maybe we should get to that one next.
Okay.
Well,
Well,
no,
we'll get into
nothing
this week's
promised
case
yet.
first, and then I'll watch it, and then
There we
I'll let
go.
you know what I
All right.
think.
Well, it's good to be back doing a full case this week instead of reacting to Netflix. So let us know what you guys prefer. Like, we loved kind of doing both things, but if you guys prefer one over the other, like, let us know in the Facebook group. We love your feedback, and we want to do cases that you guys want to hear us talk about. So keep that in mind. But Darren, for this week, let's chat about this. So in April of 1982, David Notek met Michelle Watson and became immediately captivated by the woman he would later describe as the most beautiful person he had ever seen. Now, if you're
For
like
clarity,
me,
this isn't Snoopy. Even though I know we're all thinking that it should be Snoopy, she wasn't born yet. So everyone needs to like
That's
relax because
fair.
she wasn't born yet.
That's fair. Now, if you're like me and you're a huge Spider-Man fan, I know there's a couple of you out there. A new Spider-Man movie's coming up. Michelle Watson, of course, played
Of
by,
course.
of course, Darren, you love,
Of
played
course.
by
I
who?
love that she's played by.
Zendaya.
Okay, yes.
Okay, MJ
Oh, she's
also.
with Tom Holland. They met on Spider-Man, or they met on a different
They
movie?
did. They did meet on
Oh,
Spider-Man, as far as I can
okay.
tell. And MJ in the movie, her name is actually Michelle Watson. So just a little fun fact. Now, usually there's a Mary Jane Watson in the Spider-Man. You probably have heard, like, Kirsten Dunst has played her, others.
Yes, Emma Stone.
I was just trying to remember if she played Mary Jane or did she play Gwen? She didn't play Gwen Stacy, did she? I kind of forget who
I
Emma
miss the
Stone played.
Kirsten Dunst days of Spider-Man and Tobey Maguire. I miss those movies. The
They
upside
were
down kiss, that
classic.
was like
Iconic, beyond iconic.
iconic.
But this is a different Michelle Watson that we're talking about. So, friends and neighbors saw this pair as an ordinary couple building a life in rural Washington, but that public image hid years of cruelty, manipulation, and unfortunately, eventually, death. At the time they met, Michelle was already twice divorced and raising her two daughters, Nikki and Sam. David had served in the Navy for years and later found work in construction, cultivating a reputation for being a quiet but hardworking man. The two married in 1987 and settled into life together on a secluded property in Raymond, Washington. In 1989, just a couple years later, the couple welcomed a third daughter, Tori. The no-tech farmhouse sat behind gates on a large property, giving the family privacy and making it difficult for outsiders to see what happened in the home. Neighbors often described the family as normal, if not somewhat private. Inside the house, however, Michelle kept, yeah, this is like very common and casual. Inside the house, however, Michelle kept order through emotional cruelty and violence. Her daughters would later say that David rarely challenged Michelle and seemed unable or unwilling to even stop her behavior. This imbalance of power became the foundation for years of abuse that eventually ended in multiple deaths, which we'll, of course, be getting into.
It kind of reminds me of the mystery of Natalia Grace, the curious case of Natalia Grace, where like that original foster mom allegedly, although she wasn't interviewed in it, was like abusive to the kids and Natalia and her husband. And her husband like didn't do anything about it. And that was like that was his complaint. But you know, emotional type of abuse is sort of sometimes the worst because other people can't see it. And it's
Yeah, that's
very
right.
easy to hide for the perpetrator, if not so obviously the victim is going to be hard to hide. But like, you know, one man's argument is another man's abuse. And even though there is a real line there, for some people, that's kind of hard to delineate.
Yeah, and also to frankly describe in a court of law with evidence sometimes, because there aren't marks or weapons, things like that.
Well, 1988, great year, great vintage, by the way. I was born then. Michelle's 13-year-old nephew, Shane Watson, moved into the farmhouse. His mother struggled with substance abuse, and his father was frequently incarcerated, leaving Shane without a stable place to live. The no-tech home appeared to offer safety and structure, but according to later testimony, it became sort of another horrific environment for him. Curious to see how sort of having a son at play with daughters might
Yeah,
change
like
the
the
dynamic
gender.
here. But Shane joined a household where Michelle demanded obedience and where punishments could be sudden and extreme. And I think that's a very good way to control someone, is having them not know what to expect at any given moment. And so you kind of make them really beholden to you. As a teenage boy dependent on adult relatives, he had little power to leave or challenge the conditions around him. Around the same era, Michelle invited Kathy Loreno, a 30-year-old hairdresser and friend, to move into their home. Just
It's a lot of people
interesting.
like all up in this house and all up in this farmland. I'm like, where's everyone sleeping? Like,
Well,
why are they agreeing?
I'm also wondering, like, does Michelle not have awareness? Because inviting sort of this outsider in would beg the question. Now, some records place Kathy's arrival in 1991, it should be said, but other narrative accounts say she arrived in December of 1988. Either way, though, she was living with the family. And what does remain consistent across sources is that, like Shane, Kathy entered the no-tech household vulnerable and in need of support. That's probably the only way that you can. It's a little Charlie Manson, right? You're preying upon the vulnerable. It doesn't work with a strong-minded person at any given time. Kathy, that is, had reportedly fallen out with her mother and agreed to exchange help with childcare for room and board. Pretty fair trade.
Okay, so it sounds like, by the way, she's building this kind of exchange of services in
That puts
or
Michelle in the driver's seat,
yes,
though.
exactly. That's what I was trying to say. Yes, thank you.
Well, at first, Michelle treated Kathy warmly, but once Kathy became dependent on the family for housing and stability, Michelle's behavior shifted dramatically, just like John and I were saying. Michelle began drugging Kathy with tranquilizers and
Oh my
controlling her
God.
access to food. She accused Kathy of sleepwalking and binge eating, then used those accusations to justify her cruel behavior. So, you need to be put down. I need to lock you in your room because you're being crazy when you're not, when left to your own devices. She isolated Kathy from other members of the household and forced her to sleep in the basement boiler room. This kind of, I don't know. I have a situation right now with a friend that I feel like this could be happening to in some sort of way.
Oh, really? That's
Not
terrible.
to the extent of maybe like locking them up, but playing on their emotions and
Their
making them
vulnerabilities.
and stripping all their dignity away and
Oh,
all of their
God.
self-worth away. And it's sort of been this constant thing now that's been happening for a few years. And unfortunately, this person is an adult, so there's really not much that I can actually do. But things like this, like really, like I have to remind myself that for me, you know, I kind of have this like OCD tendency. Like, obviously, I want to be in control at all times. You know, I can notice my anger or something being as a result of kind of being out of control and an anxious feeling, you know? And then you kind of remember that that's, well, bad. And obviously, I want to fix it and not try to control everything or everyone. There's this like extra limit to that. And there's this like extra stratosphere of just abuse. And I don't know, this is kind of hitting a little bit like close to home, not for me, but just for
Sorry to
this
hear that.
like situation that I'm aware of. And it's, yeah, it's just,
It
it's
puts you in such a
kind of,
weird place because you care about these people and you want the best for them, but it's also like, how do you
but you can't want it
intervene?
more than them. You can't, you, if they can't see it as an adult, then
Right.
really what can you do? And that's probably like the most tragic thing in cases sometimes is
Right.
being like with, you know, with parents who have kids that are like drug addicts, for example, or, you
Yeah.
know, stealing and living on the street. Unless they want to give the drug up, all you can do is not enable them by giving them, you know, shelter.
Yeah.
But how can you not provide that as a parent? It's just, it's
Oh, yeah.
torturous where you
It
know that you know
is.
better, but until they do, there's
There's
your
nothing.
hands are tied. And talk about a lack of control there, you know?
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that about your friend. I hope that everything works out for the
Yeah,
best.
me too. Me too.
Well, back to this story, though. Witnesses had later described a relentless campaign of humiliation that seemed designed to break Kathy emotionally and physically. David, who might have intervened, instead became Kathy's torturer. According to later reports, he had duct taped Kathy's limbs and poured bleach into open wounds on her
Oh my
body.
God.
Witnesses also testified Kathy was forced to work outside either naked or barely clothed during freezing winter weather.
I guess it's easy. First, I'm like, how do you let the neighbors? But I guess if you have a really private property, you know,
Yeah.
then it's hard to see this.
Yeah, that's right. Well, she became, in one of those instances, she became hypothermic during the punishment. And over time, Kathy lost approximately 100 pounds. And that's a huge amount of weight. Like
Especially for a
losing
woman.
10, yeah, for a woman
Huge.
especially, right? Her teeth and her hair deteriorated and fell out, and her mental state, as you might expect, declined notably. People who saw her in later years reported barely recognizing the once independent woman who had moved in seeking help. The
Yeah.
abuse unfolded over years, allowing those inside the home to normalize this behavior that would have shocked anyone else. And this gradual escalation is common in coercive households where victims are conditioned to survive day by day rather than challenging the entire system. I mean, a lot of this too is like you can understand maybe as a victim what's happening around you, but if you don't have the resources to change it, you're not gonna like make your world worse, you know, by
This is
being.
why, you know, there's a lot of with domestic violence stuff, there's a lot of like financial controls there for a lot of people because
Exactly.
they make you, and in this case, same thing, they make you fully dependent on you. They, you know, they strip you down of any sort of self-worth, self-esteem, confidence in yourself that you just believe that to be the reality. And then you just go completely in survival mode. And it's just about getting through the day as opposed to actually living life. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of times you hear about abusive relationships. I remember our long conversation during the Dirty John days back in
Yeah.
Martinis and Murder. We talked
Same
with
thing.
Laura Richards from Crime Analyst Podcast. We love her, and she was talking about coercive control. And you know,
Yeah.
the thing is, people see these situations and they're like, "Well, why didn't you just leave?" Well, some people don't have the literal financial resources to, you know, walk out and be a, get out of that situation.
Because the reality of having no friends, no family, no money, no clothes, no shelter is so terrifying that it's worth, you know, I would in people's minds almost suffering that abuse because at least you have shelter over your head or something, and that sometimes the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know, even if the devil you don't know is going to provide freedom and you're going to work it
That's
out and there
right.
are resources there. So it's just really hard to judge someone's reaction for staying in abuse.
Yeah, I agree with you. I love what you just said. Well, sometimes the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. Ooh,
Yeah.
that is
Yeah.
deep. And
Yeah.
that can be applied in so many different ways. Okay. We might need to put
Sometimes
that
that's
on
why
some
people goes
merch or
back,
something. Yeah.
but yeah, sometimes going back to exes and going
Yeah.
back into your old
Yeah.
patterns. I mean, there is a familiarity, and familiarity breeds comfort, even if you hate your
Yeah.
situation. And so, yeah.
Totally. I hear you. Well, back to this story. So, children raised in those environments that we were just talking about often learn silence as a survival skill, and adults trapped financially, as we just mentioned, or emotionally, can become resigned and complicit in the behavior, just like David did. Tragically, in July of 1994, Kathy died while confined in the farmhouse laundry room, and
God.
David later told investigators that she actually choked on her own vomit, which was is just a tragic way to go. While we don't know this to be true with 100% certainty, we do know that Kathy died after prolonged abuse while in custody of the people that had isolated her. And we also
Right.
know that Michelle's priority upon Kathy's death was actually to cover it up.
According to investigators, Michelle directed David and Shane to burn Kathy's body in the backyard.
Oh my
After the
God.
cremation, her ashes were scattered in the Pacific Ocean. And I mean, there is a way to get rid of bodies, and that's the way to do it. You know, I mean, burning it, scattering it in multiple different places. So this is just
Eliminating evidence, yeah.
eliminating everything. Michelle then threatened the family members, warning that everyone would go to prison if the truth came out. So many people have to buy into Michelle's
Yeah.
narrative. So she's obviously very good at it, right? Because if
Yeah,
someone's
yeah.
telling me this person died in the house, we're burning it and scattering the ashes,
Yeah.
I'd like to think I was the type of person to be like, hey, 911, this doesn't sound good, as opposed to being
Right,
threatened
yeah.
by them being like, well, you're going to go to prison for knowing something. Like,
Yeah.
there's a lot of factors that have to run into this gameplay. But to
I agree.
mislead Kathy's relatives, Michelle allegedly forged letters claiming Kathy had moved to California with a boyfriend and started a new life. Okay. Well, in February of 1995, yeah.
No, I was just gonna say at this point, I mean, I know we still have a little bit of the story to get through, but like, what is the motive behind torturing like this? Like, is it just to get what she wants out of like the services out of these people?
Curious as to her background with all of this. In February of 1995, 19-year-old Shane reportedly showed his cousin Nikki several Polaroid photographs documenting the abuse Kathy had suffered, stating that he intended to bring the images to the authorities. Good for him.
Good,
Shortly
yeah.
thereafter, David confronted Shane, however, and shot him with a 22 caliber rifle. He later gave changing explanations for the killing, first claiming the gun fired accidentally during a struggle, which you'd be able to kind of see with the gunpowder residue.
That's right.
He later admitted he actually stood several feet away when he shot Shane in the neck. Gentlemen. And after his death, Shane's body was burned and his ashes were scattered at the beach in the same manner used after Kathy's death. Michelle told family members and Shane's friends that he had run away to Alaska to become a fisherman.
Ridiculous. Well, in 1999, 57-year-old Ronald Woodworth, a local veteran and friend of the family, moved into the no-tech home. And by then, Nikki and Sam had moved out, leaving only 14-year-old Tori living at the property. Those are the children, of course. David was often away working remote construction jobs, creating long stretches where Michelle controlled the household with little interference. Ronald Woodworth soon became her next target, as you might assume, and Michelle subjected Ronald to punishments that she called wallowing, forcing Ronald to roll in mud while she sprayed him with cold water. It's another thing is like, where do you come up with this shit either? You know, like as someone who's doing this torture,
Right, like I wouldn't even know where to begin.
How is this a thing that you're coming up with? She made him complete outdoor chores while wearing only underwear and even ordered him to jump from the second story roof of the farmhouse onto gravel with bare feet. Ugh, that's just
It's so
gave me
hard
chills.
to imagine someone completely forgetting that they have a choice.
Yeah,
Because when you feel like you're
right.
presented with no choices and then you're kind of convinced and manipulated, like that's what's so crazy about this is she didn't push him off the second story, right? He
Right.
jumped. He
Right.
jumped. But it just, oh, these cases really get into my fucking brain
I
about it
know. They're
because
so
they
psychological.
just strip you of all of your humanity. It's what makes it
Humanity,
separates
yeah.
us from the animals, right? Like it
Right.
separates us. And so,
Yeah.
yeah.
When he severely injured his feet, Michelle treated those wounds by plunging them into boiling water and bleach, of course, causing devastating damage to the tissue. Tori later described the smell inside of the house as a combination of bleach and decomposing flesh. Oh my God, this is so
Should that be our
disturbing.
Bath and Body Works scent that we were
I don't
talking about
know.
on NLR?
I don't think that's the one that I was talking about. No.
Okay.
On July 22nd, 2003, and by the way, so now we're like, think of the span of torture that's been happening now as we get into the
Right.
2003s. Michelle called David and told him that Ronald Woodworth was dead. David returned home and waited 3 days before burying Ronald in the backyard.
Ew.
Michelle claimed Ronald had taken his own life, but feared police would not believe her because questions had already been raised in earlier years about Kathy. Right, exactly. Well, during the same week, the three No-Tech sisters, Nikki, Sam, and Tori, reunited in Seattle. Now, by the way, as we mentioned, two of them had left. These are the children that are like aware of what's going on. Two of them were able to leave. As adults, they had enough distance from the household to compare those memories and understand the scale of what they had lived through and decided together that they were no longer going to remain silent. The sisters contacted law enforcement and reported the years of violence and suspicious deaths that were connected to their childhood home. On August 8th, 2003, deputies had enough, I guess, evidence and arrested David and Michelle at their home.
I also wonder, like with David, was it just he thought, we only have the background of him thinking she was, the prettiest girl in the world. Are you
Right.
so swayed by that that you just go along with these things? How much are you aware
That's what I
of? How
mean.
much not? Like, how
Yeah.
did, presumably if he was married to a quote unquote normal person, right? Who, whatever. I don't think he would have the penchant for murder or torture.
Right.
Like, so you got to be convinced of this eventually. And
Yeah.
it's
Well,
just
maybe there was some.
fascinating.
Sorry to interrupt you. Maybe there was some sort of, like I said, like there must be some sort of exchange of needs happening. What that
Has to
is, we'll
be
never know,
playing on
really, but
something. Yeah,
yeah,
playing on something.
exactly.
Well, investigators obtained a search warrant after hearing firsthand accounts from witnesses, including the daughters. On August 9th, 2003, David led deputies to a burial site in the backyard where forensic teams
Wow.
exhumed human remains, later identified as Ronald Woodworth. I'm wondering here why they chose they. I don't know if it was David. I don't know if it was Michelle. To have burned the bodies, before
I
and scattered
know.
the ashes,
Yeah.
but you bury this guy in the backyard knowing that there's full evidence. And then David seems to have kind of no problem leading them there.
Yeah, I don't know what that was about.
While in custody, David confessed to shooting Shane and to burning the remains of both Shane and Kathy. So at least we have that. And that's kind of how we know that David changed the story so many times about Shane.
I
Michelle
think
initially told
that's
it.
about Ronald. Sorry, not Shane and Kathy. Ronald and Kathy. There was a mistake in our info there.
Well, no, because while in custody, David confessed to shooting
Oh, I'm
Shane
sorry.
and
You're
burning
right.
the
You're right.
remains of him and Kathy. Yeah.
That's right. Sorry about that, guys. I was
Because
trying to be a good
Michelle
producer.
probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Michelle initially told
Thank you.
investigators a rehearsed story claiming Ronald was still alive, had traveled by bus to San Diego. However, explanation collapsed once the body was actually
Well,
recovered.
right.
Yeah. On August 13th, 2003, my dad's birthday,
Oh.
prosecutors charged Michelle with two counts of first-degree murder for the deaths of Kathy and Ronald. David was charged with first-degree murder for killing Shane, along with rendering criminal assistance and unlawful disposal of human remains. Because even if Michelle was forcing David to kill Shane, that doesn't mean Michelle killed Shane.
Yeah, correct.
On
100%.
August 14th, 2003, a judge increased bail for both defendants to $5 million each. That's no small sum.
No, that's a
Investigators also
lot.
examined the suspicious February 2002 death of 81-year-old James McClintock, another veteran who had died while in Michelle's care.
Oh my
Authorities
God.
reviewed aerial photographs of the property showing freshly disturbed earth and used advanced FBI resources to search for additional evidence. This is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
As the case progressed, prosecutors faced the challenge common in no-body homicide and delayed report abuse cases. Some victims' remains had been destroyed, and many of the alleged crimes were years old, which only makes it harder. Even so, the volume of testimony and corroborating evidence created strong pressure for negotiated pleas.
Yeah, of course. Well, on February 3rd, 2004, David pleaded guilty to second-degree murder for the death of Shane. He also admitted to the crimes involving criminal assistance and unlawful disposal of remains. In exchange for cooperation and testimony, I had a feeling this is what this was gonna play out this way. In exchange for cooperation and testimony against Michelle, prosecutors recommended a sentence of just under 15 years. Kind of
Crazy.
a little crazy to me. The police spared the state
I'm
a
going to look them up on
lengthy.
the internet as you talk
Yeah,
because I'm
do
curious.
that. Do that. The plea spared the state a lengthy contested trial and strengthened the case against Michelle. On June 18th, 2004, Michelle entered an Alfred plea to one count of second-degree murder and one count of first-degree manslaughter. Of course, an Alfred plea, for those who don't know, allows a defendant to maintain innocence while acknowledging that prosecutors possess enough evidence to likely secure a conviction at trial. We've heard this throughout the case, throughout the
The staircase
years.
had it,
The staircase, that's
yeah.
right. Judges often question defendants carefully before accepting such pleas. As policy, we don't like when innocent people plead guilty, is kind of the thought there. In this case, the court repeatedly asked whether Michelle was acting voluntarily, and she answered yes. And on a, excuse me, and on August 19th, 2004, the judge sentenced Michelle to 266 months in prison. That
Damn.
total consisted of 164 months for second degree murder and 102 months for first degree manslaughter ordered consecutively. The
Yeah, so
judge noted.
266 divided by 12 is 22 years.
That's right.
A
Thank you,
little over.
Darren. Look at Darren with the quick math, you guys.
Well, I couldn't figure it out, so it was weird.
The judge noted that a recent United States Supreme Court ruling, Blakely versus Washington, limited his ability to impose a harsher exceptional sentence. Okay, that explains it, because I'm sort of like, I don't know about this sentencing.
Yeah.
His remarks suggested that he did believe Michelle's conduct warranted more punishment than the law allowed, which I think we can all kind of maybe agree on that.
Yeah, I'm glad Michelle didn't get like a plea deal. Like, I'm
Yeah, of
glad
course.
convinced me. By the way, when you look these people up,
Yeah.
not that it says anything, but they just look like normal fucking people.
Oh,
You
God,
know,
don't
like they
tell me
don't look,
that.
you know. I know. On August 26, 2004, David received a sentence of 179 months, just under 15 years. He was paroled in 2018 after serving his term. Reports stated that David maintained relationships with two of his daughters while he served his sentence. That's a tough relationship, I imagine.
Yeah, I can imagine.
On April 2005, Michelle filed the motion seeking to withdraw her plea, claiming she had been misinformed about sentencing exposure and pressured by her attorneys. The trial
Interesting.
court denied the request. On December 26, 2006, the Court of Appeals of Washington affirmed her convictions and ruled the plea had been entered knowingly and voluntarily. The NoTech daughters chose to speak publicly about what they had witnessed and endured, working with author Greg Olson on the book If You Tell, using their story to warn others about hidden abuse inside seemingly ordinary homes. I know abuse can become normalized when nobody outside sees enough to intervene. It is
Right.
also about the courage required to break that silence
Yes.
years later, which it definitely is, because three sisters finally told the truth. Victims who had been erased were finally named and were able to tell the story today.
Yeah, big shout out to the sisters who were able to find the courage and strength in an otherwise, extremely manipulative and controlling atmosphere. I mean, obviously they had moved out or whatever, but even still, that's still a big, huge risk. So congratulations to them, and thank you to them for giving justice
Yeah.
to the to these victims and their families.
I
What a
am.
story.
What a story. How terrible. This one really got to me today.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Just with but let us know what you guys think at Carpe Darren, at Jay Thrasher, Shaken and Disturbed podcast fans on Facebook. Of course, we have Patreon as well. Leave a YouTube comment, Shaken and Disturbed podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm curious if you guys have ever been in a situation or know anyone who's also been in a situation, not necessarily murder related, but
Right.
psychological abuse kind of going on in some sort of way. Let us know.
Yeah.
Let's end positively on some listener shout outs.
Yes.
John Brooke in our Facebook group is listening to our reaction episode of Netflix's The Crash and had this to say about black boxes in cars, because we were
Oh,
talking about
right.
sort of this, you know, quote, "I'm listening now. The black box is the EDR I mentioned a while ago. As a claims adjuster, it was intentional. She survived because they hit the sign first, changing the angle at which the car hit the building. Had she not hit the sign, she probably would have died as well." End quote.
Having a claims adjuster weigh in on this actually would be, that's a really good point. And thank you, Brooke, for commenting that, because I do feel like claims adjusters have to think about all this stuff as their
No, they
job.
certainly do.
Yeah.
But Brooke, do we think that she was smart enough to know to hit the
Well,
sign
that's a good
first? Like,
point.
would she have known that? Like, that's also what I
Yeah.
wanted to know, because I feel like there's so many other things to that support the argument that this was intentional, but I don't think it was intentional for her to survive. I think that might have just been like a
Yeah.
lucky, quote unquote, lucky break. And this is
Right.
the reason why that break happened. But I don't think she knew anything. And I'm curious if you think she did. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Brooke, for that
Yes,
insight.
thank you.
Kaylin, a Radish supporter on Patreon since October 2022. Kaylin, thank you. Also listened to our review, Darren, and said, quote, being a fellow young person, which I frankly don't think I can add to at this
You're
point.
definitely not there.
Mackenzie just gives me the worst vibes. I feel like Davion was collateral damage to the toxic relationship that she had with that she has with Dom, end
Yeah, and
quote.
I think in our conversations,
Yeah.
it would totally fit the narrative that Davion, being a friend of Dom, was like, break up with this chick, break up with
Right.
her. She's bad news. And then,
Yeah.
Mackenzie kind of getting the wind of that might have affected her.
Yeah.
All alleged.
Right.
We may never
We'll never
know.
know.
We
Yeah, we
may never
probably won't.
know, but
Yeah.
it certainly fits that narrative.
I agree. Well, if you want to be amazing like Kaylin and be a radish or a sussy radish on Patreon and get all of your episodes early and ad-free, be sure to join us at the radish or sussy radish tier over on Patreon. And Darren, where is that again?
Patreon.com/shakenanddisturbed, or click the link in our show notes. We make it easy for you.
There you go. All right. Well, of course, we're back to our regular sign-off. So I want to say take care, protect your peace, and sending you guys very big hugs.
I think mine just has to be Snoopy, 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 Snoopy,
We can
because right now she
adjust.
looks
Yeah.
so cute. It's insane,
Yeah.
John.
She is
What I'm
insane.
looking at right now is insane.
And guys, if you are a Patreon fan or a subscriber at any tier, you can go and see the gallery of photos that I took when I saw Snoopy. In the beginning of June. It's over
You
there
mean
right
your big
now.
girl? You
My
big girl.
big girl Snoopy. Yep, that's right.
Okay,
All
that's what I
right,
thought. Big girl.
we'll see you guys next time. Bye bye.
Bye.